Well, good evening, everyone. Here at Wall Street, over at Brightstream Temple. Looks like a crowd over there. And everyone out there in the Zoom realm, wherever you may be. We are something like halfway through practice period already. I don't know exactly, but it feels, I think we're about halfway through. And for anyone who is just appearing on the scene, we have been looking at the koans of the Book of Serenity, those old Zen stories and dialogues that can be so confounding and obscure, and yet, they have an enduring way of cropping up in Dharma talks, in Zen writings, and it's good to become a little more familiar and less afraid of them. So I hope you have been in the course of these several weeks a little less afraid of them, becoming a little friendlier towards koans, and finding something, little, you know, an image, a phrase, a little dialogue that somehow stays with you and informs your practice in sometimes perhaps surprising ways. And as we keep saying, you don't have to do formal koan practice to engage with this material and to engage with these koans. So please tell us, you know, if there's one that's kind of got some spark for you and how that's working in your practice. The one for tonight is an animal koan. Animals crop up in these old stories because human beings, we are animals, and we live with and engage with other animals in our lives. Maybe not so much in, you know, contemporary urban life, but certainly back in those days, people did it on a daily basis. You know, back in medieval times, whether in China or Japan or Europe, people lived closer to the land. So this koan is not a dialogue. It's actually just a short quote from Zen master Nanchuan. And it goes like this: "The Buddhas of past, present, and future do not know it is. Cats and cows know it is." That's it. That's the koan. So first, just to introduce Nanchuan, who said this, and who appears in many koans, in several different collections. He was a Dharma heir of the great Mazu, one of the early Chinese Zen masters, and Nanchuan's own most famous student was Zhao Zhou, one of the most beloved of the classic Zen masters. Nanchuan himself lived well into his 90s. He had an awakening experience when he was in his mid-40s, and then he spent 30 years up a mountain in a little hermitage all by himself practicing before he was finally persuaded to come down and teach and become abbot of a monastery himself. And in the Book of Serenity, it says that he spoke these words to the assembly, to his monks, but we don't know anything more about the circumstances. "The Buddhas of past, present, and future do not know it is. Cats and cows know it is." So before we go any further with this, we need to know what it is. But how can we know that if the Buddhas of past, present, and future don't even know what it is? This it is extraordinarily difficult to express, let alone translate. In the Chinese, there is not even a pronoun if you look at the Chinese characters, it goes not no is and no is. You know, so Buddha's past, present, future, not no is, cats, cows, no is. There's no it. There's no pronoun it, even in the Chinese. It's understood. We run into a similar problem of language in the poem that many of you know, because we chant it sometimes, Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, which was written by Dongshan, a generation after Nanchuan. And it begins, the teaching of thusness has been intimately communicated by Buddhas and ancestors. Now you have it, so keep it well. So here it is referring to the teaching of thusness. Dongshan is referring to the transmission of this teaching of thusness from student to, from teacher to student, from the time of the Buddha, from Buddhas and ancestors. But it's also clear from the teachings that there is nothing actually transmitted. Rather, there's a kind of mutual dropping away and recognition, we could say, of thusness. So what's thusness? It's not in an English dictionary. We could say reality, just as it is, just this, right now. The story of Dongshan's awakening centers around this teaching of thusness. He had studied with his teacher, Yunyan, for some years, and then he set off on pilgrimage. And before he left, he asked his teacher, later on, if someone asks me how to describe your teaching, what should I say? And Yunyan paused, and then he replied, just this is it. And Dongshan didn't say anything. He was a bit puzzled. He didn't quite know what to make of that. But he went off. He set off on his pilgrimage. Oh, no, wait. Before he did, then Yunyan said, you are now in charge of this great matter. You must be most thoroughgoing. Well, so here it is. I've entrusted this teaching to you. So then Dongshan went off on his pilgrimage, and he was up in the mountains on a trail, and he waded across a stream and looked down and saw his own reflection. And as the record says, he awakened to the meaning of the previous exchange. And as Zen masters did in those days, he wrote a verse. When you had an awakening experience, you had to write a verse about it. So he wrote, just don't seek from others, or you'll be far estranged from self. I now go on alone, everywhere I meet it. It now is me, I now am not it. One must understand in this way to merge with suchness. So suchness and thusness, same thing. So here's that word, that pesky word, it, again. This is an it that is boundless and manifesting in this very moment, just this, your life, right here and now, with all that has converged in this moment of dynamic interconnection. So as he says, to merge with suchness is to fully meet and accept each moment in your life, just as it is. In its utter boundlessness. And not just to see and know, but to live it. To live it. So we could say this is the teaching of thusness, which is the word that Buddhist scholars have chosen to translate the Sanskrit word tatata, which is sometimes called ultimate truth, ultimate reality, the source, the unattainable, the indescribable. And the Buddha is often called Tathagata, or the thus come one. Awakening to thusness implies direct apprehension of this truth of reality, which includes both the absolute, the completely unified everythingness of existence, and the relative, the specific, the you and the me, the white and the black, the dark and the light, life and death. That's the relative. So how is it that Nan Chuan is telling us that Buddhas of past, present, and future don't know this? And that cats and cows do? Is it, as Wan Song is the commentator who wrote the introduction to this koan, is it, as he says in the introduction, becoming a Buddha, being an ancestor, is already wearing a defiled name? It's better to wear horns and fur, like an ox or a cat, right? So not to be declared a Buddha, you know, not to place the Buddha on a pedestal, out of reach, but just to live a simple, authentic life, is that what he's saying? Like a cat or a cow? Maybe so, but I think we need to look further at this translation of cats and cows, because I was surprised and delighted to learn that the character that's translated as cat is not the character for cat. It's the character for a creature that in Japanese is called a tanuki. Or otherwise known as a raccoon dog. It is most closely probably related to raccoons, and it lives in China and Japan. And it's a trickster. It's the coyote of the East. It's a notorious shapeshifter and trickster creature. There are many, many folk tales about tanukis. And sometimes you will see images of tanukis in a priest's robe. It's like wolf and sheep's clothing. You know, the tanuki wearing a priest's robe. They are sneaky creatures. And that character, that same character, can be meaning by extension, like other shape-shifting creatures, like foxes. Foxes are also tricksters in Japanese culture, or certain kinds of wild cats. So there's more here going on. And that second character is the white ox. It's not just any old cow. It's the white ox, which in Asian cultures would be a water buffalo, and which appears in the famous Zen ox herding pictures. How many people are familiar with those images, the ox herding? Yeah. I've done talks about the ox herding pictures before. There are a number of different series of ox herding pictures, but basically they depict a young ox herder monk who sets out with his ox, and at first he struggles to get the ox to behave and to go where he wants it to. So he's struggling with the ox, and gradually he learns to move with the ox, and eventually the ox and the herder become one and disappear in this sequence of images. So the ox becomes our unruly wild nature, our unruly body mind. And in some images, the ox starts out as black, and then it becomes half black, half white, and gradually becomes all the way white. It's almost like a yin yang ox. So the ox is The white ox is the mind purified of our obstructions. The water buffalo in South and Southeast Asian cultures was a highly valued animal, often beloved and cared for by the family. You know, you'd see little children kind of washing their water buffalo, taking care of their water buffalo, because it did work. It tilled the fields, provided milk, provided its dung would provide fertilizer and fuel. So it's a really valued animal. But of course, the water buffalo also has an element of wildness, you know, as do our house cats. Our house cats have, anyone who has a cat knows it has a bit of trickster nature as well. And as we do, we are only semi-domesticated ourselves. Certain anthropologists had made the case that we and our domestic animals co-domesticated each other. It's very interesting. And so you might, as you consider this koan, want to also consider how we relate to our own wild nature, our own unruly nature, how we tend to disavow it and externalize it, and how we treat the wild. How we treat the wild, and how we deem the wild as threatening and need to tame it and put it under our control or put it to our own use. So you might want to consider that as part of this koan, how we relate to wildness, unruliness, you know, and the tricky parts of ourselves. So there are some additional ox anecdotes given in the commentary to this koan. In the first, Nanchuan tells his monks, "Since youth, I have brought up a water buffalo. When I was herding it east of the valley, I didn't let it eat the water plants of that country. When I was herding it west of the valley, I didn't let it eat the water plants of that country. Now it takes in a little bit anywhere possible without being seen at all." So he's doing a little summary of the ox herding pictures in terms of his own experience with his own body-mind, his own ox. How at first he tried to tame the unruly ox, and then eventually the ox became, to use human psychological term, self-regulating. Another anecdote. One day Nanchuan saw the monk, young Zhao Zhou, who was the bath steward, heating the bath. And he said, "After lunch, invite the water buffalo to bathe." The bath steward went and invited him. And Nanchuan said, "Did you bring a rope?" Zhao Zhou pulled Nanchuan's nose with his hand. And Nanchuan said, "Right, but too rough." So how do we learn to care for our wild ox mind with just the right amount of gentleness and firmness? Anyone who's worked closely with animals knows that sometimes you need gentleness and firmness both. With children too, right? With ourselves, gentleness and firmness. Zhao Zhou asked his teacher, "Where does one who knows it go? Where does one who knows it is go?" Nanchuan said, "To the house of a patron in front of the mountain to be a water buffalo." Zhao Zhou said, "Thanks for your directions." Nanchuan said, "Last night in the third watch, the moon came to the window." So where do you go when you know it, when you know this? Is? You just go down the mountain to be a water buffalo. You graze at ease in the pasture. And when Nanchan was about to die, the head monk asked, "After you die, where will you go?" Nanchan said, "Down the mountain to be a water buffalo." The monk said, "Can I follow you?" Nanchan said, "If you follow me, you must come with a blade of grass in your mouth." Now, blade of grass in Zen stories often means this little bit of the world, just this, right now, containing the universe. Come with a blade of grass in your mouth. Join me in the pasture. So let's go back to that Dongshan poem, Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi, where he references Nanchuan's cats and cows, because he would have known this phrase. In the translation in our chant book, it goes, "Because there is the common, there are jewel pedestals, fine clothing. Because there is the startlingly different, there are house cat and cow." Right? So here, there's the house cat and cow again. That first line, "Because there is the common, or the inferior or degraded," that means there are jewel pedestals, fine clothing. That needs a little help. It's referring to a story in the Lotus Sutra, which is a kind of prodigal son tale, where a rich man's son leaves home and squanders his fortune on drinking and gambling and general dissolution. And when he's ultimately reduced to complete ruin, wandering, living on the streets, he stumbles back to his father's estate and does not recognize where he is. He sees his father dressed in fine robes with his feet resting on a jeweled footstool, that's the jeweled pedestal, and doesn't recognize his father. So his father tells his estate manager to give this young man a job in the stables, shoveling shit. This is not to humiliate the son, he's already sunk as low as he can go, but to build back his trust and confidence. And that's what happens. So the son, slowly just doing this simple physical work, regains his health and his strength and enjoys taking on the labor of tending the estate. So he's given more responsibility until finally the father reveals his identity and that this is his son and heir. He also reveals at this point that before the son left home, the father had sewn a precious jewel into the hem of his cloak, which was now so ragged and stained, but the jewel had been there all along. The young man was completely ignorant of it. So this is, of course, a parable about our practice, how in our greed and confusion and aversion and ignorance, we're blind to the reality of the Buddha nature that is with us all along, right here, this jewel that we wear and carry with us. So this is saying maybe some of us need to feel that awe, you know, of the jeweled pedestal or the enlightened ones of past and present, because we are so lost in our hopeless delusion and our stubborn habit patterns, not knowing that precious jewel, the Dharma, is within us. Maybe for a while we need to see those jewels as external to inspire us to set out on the path. The second line, though, "because there is the startlingly different, there are house cat and cow," I think needs an alternate translation. I can't help myself. The characters translated as startling, startlingly, means both sort of frightening and wonderful in the way that we use the word awesome. Both frightening and wonderful. And the character for different means strange or extraordinary. So together they mean wondrous, wondrous. And we've already learned that the cat and cow are really marvelous creatures, right? Shapeshifters. and the white ox is the clear, awakened mind. And at the same time, they're ordinary. A house cat or a cow in the pasture. So the most convincing interpretation of this line to me is that there are two kinds of Zen practitioners. One who is the abject son who cannot recognize his own true nature and needs to look up to the Buddhas and ancestors. And then the second who is keen and quick to reach for understanding and needs to come down to earth and wear horns and fur. I think that's what he's saying. If we look to the Buddhas for enlightenment as something to get and hold, we'll miss it. The tanuki, the wildcats, the foxes, and the white oxen know it without getting it, because animals live in thusness all the time. But we're human beings, and we have this pesky self-consciousness that we have to come to terms with. Maybe Dongshan is telling us in these two lines that different people need different prompts and guideposts along the path, depending on whether our self-clinging is of the self-deprecating or self-inflating variety. And we can both have both kinds. We can each have both kinds, even within one person. So I was curious to see how 900 years later, Dogen, who founded our school of Zen in Japan, how he referenced Nanchuan's and Dongshan's words about cats and cows. Because he quotes this phrase several times. One time goes like this. He says, "Just resting is like the great ocean accepting hundreds of streams. Just resting is like the great ocean accepting hundreds of streams. Arriving here, there's no forward or backward." That's the stillness of Zazen. And then he continues, "Freely going ahead is like the great surging tides riding on strong winds. Coming here, there is inner and outer." So this is where we get up from Zazen and move freely into the world of relativity and duality. And right after that he says, "Buddhas don't know it is. Cats and cows know it is." There it is again. Just this boundless life. Then in another passage, Dogen says, "There is an eye that penetrates the 10 directions and receives the entire earth." There's an eye that penetrates the 10 directions and receives the entire earth. This eye is in front of the mind and behind the mind. Such an eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind have the dazzling power of illumination. So this is the Dharma eye. "Thus, there are Buddhas in the past, present, and future who maintain what is beyond knowing, and there are cats and white oxen who launch the insightful response of already knowing." This expresses the Dharma of active Buddhas and allows the Dharma of active Buddhas. So here Dogen seems to be uniting the function of the Buddhas to maintain. He says, "The Buddhas of past, present, and future who maintain what is beyond knowing, and the cats and white oxen launch the insightful response of already knowing." So he's uniting that maintaining knowing and already knowing. He's going beyond the kind of duality of the earlier expression in a very beautiful way, I think. And this is in a text that is called Active Buddhas. Something about the wondrous, I forget the exact, the wondrous power of active Buddhas. And active Buddhas for Dogen are not static Buddhas on a shelf. They're Buddhas living in the world dynamically, practicing, realizing, and expressing thusness, just this. So what I'd like to invite you to do with this little koan is to think, what do the white ox and the wild cats and tanukis have to show and teach you about just this life? What does your house cat or dog have to teach you about living your life? What do they have to teach you about your wild, unruly body, mind, and heart? How do you treat the wildness in you? Are you like that dissolute son who can't see that he has the jewel with him all along? Or are you like that lofty one who needs to come down to the level of the cat and the cow? How might this koan serve you? Those are some questions. See what comes up for you in our, when we divide into smaller groups. What comes up for you in response to this cat and cow koan? So I will stop now and thank you all for listening, and we'll say goodnight to the folks over there on the screen. And we'll divide up the Zoom folks maybe into two groups, or depending how many are staying, maybe they'll just be one group. We're keeping the groups larger these days rather than just small, so we can hear more voices and so no one's on the spot. If you don't feel ready to speak, or it's fine to just